व्रजेदरनुरागी जनानुगामी कालं नयेद् अखिलमित्युपदेश सारं तत् ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा नाम. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Vraja, Goloka Vrindavan, Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. So this is the Upadesh Saram, or the essence of all of the instructions in this book. Because it's called Upadesh Amrita, and this verse is called Upadesh Saram, or cream of all the instructions. And here, Rupa Goswami is describing the bhajan, which was mentioned in verse 5, bhajadantam isham and bhajanavigyam. Those devotees who are engaged in bhajan. So this is the kind of bhajan that devotees are engaged in, hearing and chanting and remembering Lord Krishna. This is our austerity. Right? We don't have to perform other austerities like diving into freezing cold water in the winter or surrounding ourselves with a ring of fire, sitting in the middle of it, in the middle of the hot summer. But simply, janma karma chame divyam yu evam yu veritatvataha. So we can just understand Krishna's pastimes, activities, and his birth, etc., in truth. Then this is our austerity. Just think, tannama rupa charita adi sukirtananu. So nicely doing kirtan and bhajan, hearing and chanting of Krishna's nam, rupa, charita, his character, his pastimes, his name and form, smrityo, remembering them. Because when we hear and chant nicely, then naturally we remember them. Kramena, rasana, manasi, niyoja, and gradually engaging all of the senses in sadhana bhakti. Kritya sadhya, bhavet sadhya, bhavasa sadhana bhida. We're engaging all of our external senses and the mind in these activities. And so here Rupa Goswami describes the bhajan and the location for the bhajan. So someone might ask, you know, where should we perform all of this hearing and chanting? And here Rupa Goswami makes it very clear, Tishtan Vraje. You should go to Vrindavan and do bhajan. The best place for bhajan. And as you probably, all of you, most of you have noticed, when you come here, it's much easier to chant Hare Krishna, japa, kirtan, right? When you go back to the West, and it's not as easy, somehow or other. So this is the place, Tishtan Vraje Tadanurangi Jananugami. And one should follow anugami in the footsteps of those who are anuragi devotees, who are very much attached to Lord Krishna. And then everybody who are anuragi devotees, who are very much attached to Krishna, not just mechanically performing seva and bhajan and hearing and chanting, but they're actually in love with Krishna. In this way, kalam nayat akilam, one should perform all, spend all of one's time, 24 hours a day, like this. So this is a very important verse, describes the process and best location for bhajan. And it represents the stage called asakti. Asakti means attachment. Asakti. Sakta means attachment, and asakti means very much attached. So, at this stage of bhakti, the mind becomes automatically attached to Krishna. It automatically springs to Krishna without your even having to drag it or pull it or push it. In fact, even if you relax and space out for a few moments, still your mind will spring back to the lotus feet of Radha and Shyamasundara, even without your desiring or without your even attempting to try to remember them. Because the mind has become attached to Krishna at this stage. And that attachment is very strong. And at this stage, a person can perform Raganuga Bhajan because his mind is so much fixed on the Lord. He can remember the Lord's pastimes. He can begin to perform Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Even from the stage of Ruchi, there's some inclination towards a particular form of the Lord, particular mood of loving the Lord, and in asakti it becomes even more powerfully present. It becomes very clear to the person, his mood of love. However, he doesn't understand his sarup, his specific form, until he's at the end of asakti, approaching bhava, on the cusp between these two. Then one begins to understand his sarup. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in his Madhurya Kadambini that sometimes the Lord manifests himself to the devotee at this platform of asakti. In other words, the devotee will have some kind of brief darshan of the Lord. He can actually see. The Lord may manifest himself and his devotees or in some lila before the eyes of the devotee. And here, at this stage, the devotee has more than just a scent of his sarup, but he has some strong inclination towards a particular form and particular pastimes of the Lord. So therefore, because of that, he can begin Raganuga Bhajan, which is described in the commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So because the mind is the pivotal point in all yoga, and especially at this point, asakti, the mind becomes totally attached to Krishna, like Krishna says in the Gita, chapter 7, text 1, maya sakta mana parta yogam yujjan manasraya asangshayam samagramam yitagya sachitat shrinu. Just hear, Arjun, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, you can become completely attached to me and know me in full, free from doubt. Maya asakta mana parta. Right? Your mind can be attached to me, maya sakta, mana. So this verse is describing pure devotion. Also, in chapter 12, we have this, mayeva, what is it? You have a Gita? Someone give me a Gita. Adatsva mayi buddhim nivesaya nivashisha shimayeva atta urdvam nasangshaya. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. This verse also describes this spontaneous platform when the devotee is in love with the Lord and his mind is fixed on Krishna. His mind and intelligence are living in Krishna. So there's a few references from the Gita. But begins the commentary describing the mind. how the mind is the can be the best friend or the worst enemy. That is mentioned also in the Russian Vedas. Dlatavo kto bopidil on luchi drug. For one who can conquer the mind, he becomes the best friend. But for one who has failed to do so, his very mind will remain his greatest enemy. Velichaisam vragom. Right? So, the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness is to train the mind. So Prabhupada says, since the mind may be one's enemy or friend, one has to train it to become his friend. And this is what ISKCON is for. He says, the mind contains hundreds of thousands of impressions from the past, not only in this life, but in many previous lives. And these impressions sometimes come in contact with one another and produce contradictory pictures. In this way, the mind's function can become dangerous for a conditioned soul. Did you ever have contradictory pictures produced in your mind? Yes? I mean, you know, some crazy thoughts, like anger, like great anger. Sometimes you, who knows, maybe you were murdered violently in your last life, and you have this impression, and then, you know, maybe you're walking along the street late at night, and you see some dark figure, you know, walking along the road, and suddenly you have the, you know, you become very afraid. Or sometimes people, when they go up on a building and they look down, then they feel very dizzy, right? Because maybe in their last life, they died falling off of a building, right? Something like this. Well, so many impressions. Fear, anxiety, anger, lust, greed, envy, right? So many of these impressions all wound up in the mind, like a reel. And this, Prabhupada says, it can be actually dangerous psychologically. And then what to speak of for spiritual life. So, so he says that at the time of death, someone may think of something which is not very congenial for his own good. Just like in Mayapur about 4 years ago, there was some British devotees swimming around in the Ganga, and one of the boys was swimming very far out in the river, and he got pulled under into the water from an undertow, some kind of undercurrent, which pulled him down. And he was not such a strong swimmer, so he just got pulled down, sucked down into this. And then the other devotees were swimming, and then they said, oh, where did he go? And then they saw part of his body come up and then go down again. So then they dove down, 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 and they saw him getting pulled down by this undertow. And then finally they pulled him out, and they dragged him to the shore, and he was coughing and sputtering, and he had come very close to death. And finally, when he came to his senses and he was able to speak, he said that he saw his whole life shoot before him, just like a movie going 100 miles an hour, his whole life from his childhood. And then he said, just like the devotees tell you that your mind fixes on one thing, one of the scenes from your life, your mind just grabs onto that. And then they asked him, what did you think about? What did your mind grab onto? And then he just looked down. He was greatly ashamed. They said, come on, tell us, please. And then he said, oh, all right. Then he sang this song. When your hands can be as soft as her face with mild green fairy liquid. It was a commercial from the television for, you know, wash up liquid for washing pots. And the devotees, they just started laughing. And he felt so terrible that if he died, he would have, you know, come back as a mild green fairy liquid bottle or something, you know. But it shows how the mind is so flickering and has so many impressions, and it's a real battle, tooth and nail, from beginning to end. Until we come to the stage of asakti, we really have to fight it out. Or at least to ruchi, because if we get to ruchi, then at least we have a taste, and we got something quite substantial. But until that time, as we said yesterday, we have to be very diligent, stay with devotees, be very regular, good sadhana, all of these things, very strict. And so we have to practice remembering Krishna always so that we can go to him at the time of death. This is the conclusion of Shastra. Of course, Krishna doesn't exist in isolation. He's always with his devotees, and he's in some dhamma, performing some lila. So remembering Krishna also includes remembering his associates, not just Krishna in isolation. Like in some of the Hindi posters, sometimes we see, you know, Krishna with the Om sign in the back, something like this. And he's out in floating in outer space with some Om sign, and there's nothing else there. But Krishna is not alone. He's always with his flute and his cows and gopis, coward boys, his mother, father, and so many associates. And they all love him in certain ways. So meditating on the associates and their mood of love is also part of remembering Krishna, and that is done at this stage. Because one loves Krishna in a particular mood, and he covets the love of an eternal resident of Vrindavan. He becomes attracted to this kind of love, and then he hears and chants about that particular associate. And this is natural at the higher stages of bhakti, of the Madhyam Adhikari. Prabhupada comments in the 10th canto in the Damodar Lila, when Mother Yashoda is trying frantically to tie Krishna up with ropes. She's trying to bind him, but she can't even catch him. And then even when she catches him, she can't tie the ropes because they're two fingers too short. And there she's described as wearing beautiful saffron cloth, and her earrings, her perspiration off of her cheeks, the malati flowers falling from her hair, her dress is becoming a little bit slackened from chasing after Krishna. And Prabhupada says there that devotees should meditate on these features of Mother Yashoda. The devotees who want to, devotees who are attracted to the parental mood should meditate on these features of Mother Yashoda. And this is Raganuga Bhajan, actually, in a simple way. Of course, we know Bharat Maharaj, he was also a very elevated devotee, but somehow or other he thought of a deer at the time of death. So how could it happen? I mean, he was so advanced. He had given up his beautiful wife and his opulent kingdom. He was the emperor of the whole earth. So renounced, he was in the forest. How could it happen that he became attached to a deer? Well, one thing is he left the association with devotees. He was alone. So when one's alone, then anything may happen. And he wasn't consulting with devotees. You know, when he saw that there was some attachment building in his mind for the deer, he didn't have some siksha guru to go to and say, you know, this is happening to me. Can you please give me some advice? And no one to consult with. And Prabhupada said, he willfully chose. Sometimes it happens. He willfully chose to get involved. He allowed himself to start meditating and become attached to the little deer. And then gradually it pulled his mind away from his bhajan. That he was performing his pujas externally while his mind was thinking about the deer. So it just means we must be careful at all stages. Because Bharat Maharaj was also at the cusp of Bhava Bhakti. So, and Prabhupada said here and in some other places that we should try to arrange our lives in such a way that we can always remember Krishna constantly, 24 hours a day. So, I mean, this program of Bhakti Shastri is good for that. But then, you know, you have also, when you go back to your normal service, you should somehow continue to hear and chant and remember Krishna somehow or other. You have to see which services are favorable for you to help you to remember Krishna. And of course, to reside in Vraj, that is very helpful. Because here, Krishna is king, right? Not Maya. And he's very much present. You can feel his presence here. And plus, everyone's chanting his name 24 hours around the clock. You can hear all of the neighbors singing bhajans, chanting Radhe Radhe, the big loudspeakers. All right. So then the practice of this sadhana bhakti, in sadhana bhakti there's two kinds, vaidhi sadhana bhakti and raganuga sadhana bhakti. So at this stage, raganuga sadhana bhakti can be engaged in. So Srila Prabhupada quotes from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu from chapter 15. Krishnam smaran janam chasya prishnam nijasamihitam tat tat kataratas chaso kuryat vasam raje sada. A devotee should always reside in the transcendental realm of Raja and always engage in Krishnam smaram janam chasya prishnam. Remembrance of Krishna and his beloved associates. By following the footsteps of such associates and by entering under their eternal guidance, one can acquire an intense desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, not only Krishna will manifest himself, but his devotees will manifest themselves to the sadhaka. And encourage them, guide them, help them on the path. The devotees, the eternal associates of the Lord, are also active in helping us in our devotional life. Maybe not everyone at this present moment, but at some time, at some place, at some point in our devotional life, the Lord's eternal associates may assist us in some way. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it mentions that they may even take the form of trees and birds or animals. And they may help us from falling down, if we're sincere. Or they may do some other... They may... help us, give us some shakti in our preaching, some power in our preaching. They may help us in certain ways at some critical times. It mentions this. Sanatana Goswami says these things. The practice is further described. Seva Saraka Rupena Siddha Rupena Chatrahi Tadbhavalipsuna Karya Vrajalokanu Sarataha. In the transcendental realm of Vraj, one should serve the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna with a feeling similar to that of his associates. And one should place himself under the direct guidance of a particular associate of Krishna and should follow in his footsteps. This method is applicable both in the stage of sadhana and in the stage of sadhya, when one is a Siddha Purush, or a spiritually perfect soul. So, yes, it's true, in the stage of sadhana and in the siddha stage. But that sadhana stage is beyond the point of nishtha. One has to be freed from all material contaminations and material desires before he can begin this practice. The Prabhupada gives warning two or three times in chapter 15 in the Nectar of Devotion that one has to make sure that he's not a trace of any contamination is left in his character before he begins this kind of Raganuga Bhajan. Not a trace. Otherwise, he says, one may become putrefied instead of purified from such bhajan. In other words, focusing on intimate pastimes of Krishna with the gopis may bring about thoughts of one's mundane love life or sex life. And Prabhupada gives a funny example of a man. He says, when I hear the name Radha, I think of my barber's wife, Radha. So, and especially some of the literature of the Goswamis are very erotic and describe Krishna's erotic, loving conjugal pastimes with the gopis, embracing and kissing them, and details are described. So, if you read these and you're not free from material desires, then you should be very careful. Because then those material desires will blossom within your heart and maybe even explode. And then you'll be left on the floor, you know, a bloody mess. You'll have so many material desires. So, one cannot jump into this type of practice, but one has to gradually enter into it after the stage of nishtha. When one comes to ruchi, and particularly when one comes to asakti. So when you see that you no longer have any what is the word? Oh, you're not tired. No more fatigue when you're chanting japa and you feel very much enlivened. You never fall asleep during class or gayatri. You have a strong taste for hearing and chanting. And then particularly when the mind is completely fixed on Krishna, that's asakti. Well, until that time, one performs Vaidisandha Bhakti to try to get purified from these material desires. There have been some discussions in the past few years about this topic, maybe, by, I don't know, if some of you. You know, this is called Rasika Bhakti. Actually, Rasika Bhakti has been somehow like given a bad name, just because of some political implications. But actually, Rasika Bhakti is pure, pure bhakti. That's what we want. We want a proper way through the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. It's part of our tradition, it's part of our culture, and it's part of the development of pure devotional service. It's just that one has to do it at the right time, in the right way, etc. Generally, the other institutions, the other Gaudi institutions, not all of them, but some, they may encourage or stress this kind of devotion at in a different way than Srila Prabhupada. Young devotee who's barely at the stage of bhajana kriya to begin to meditate on his sarup, something like this. So this is just blatant sahajiism. So sahajiyas, the word sahajiya is a very strong word. It means a very dangerous, fanatical, deviant person. Doesn't mean somebody who's a little sentimental. So we shouldn't use this word when we're describing some, you know, ISKCON Vaishnava or someone who's sentimental or something like this. But the sahajiyas, they don't follow Ekadashi. They feel that they don't have to do that because they're so, you know, rasic or whatever. They're so pure. They don't worship Shalagram Shila or Tulsi Devi. They don't, a lot of them don't accept Guru. They don't study Shastras. Never. You never see a group, you know, a seminar, a Bhakti Shastra group of Sahajiyas. No, they don't study Shastra. So you can see there's a lot of major principles that they don't follow. They don't follow Rupa and Sanatan and the other Goswamis of Vrindavan, who study Shastra, who worship Shalagram Shilas, who worship Tulsi, who did Dandabat Prikram around Govardhan, Radhakun, and all of these things, offered obeisances to many devotees. They don't follow like this. And some of them, they dress up like gopis with bracelets and bangles, saris, and high falsetto voices, etc., etc. You might have seen some of these characters wandering around here. There's quite a few. However, there are some Gaudiya Vaishnavas who are not Sahajiyas, but they have a different approach or different emphasis of Raganuga Bhajan than we do in ISKCON. They more or less follow the instructions of the Aracharyas before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. This is the finer differences between us and some other Gaudiya institutions. Because if you read the commentaries of Jiva Goswami and the other Goswamis, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Bhagavatam, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you'll see that they encourage that any person, as soon as he gets a little inclination for Raganuga Bhajan, you should immediately do it. That is their advice. As soon as there is some slight indication or some slight attraction, they encourage, yes, do it, do it. Very good, do it. Because at that time, men were very pure. In India, especially in villages, people didn't even know what was illicit sex. They had no conception of what this is. You know? Very pure. People were very pure. But even Gaura Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, he said at his time, that Radhakun would be a very wonderful place to do bhajan, except for 11 rascals who are living there. At his time, there were 11 rascals. Now there are 11,000 rascals. So, hundreds of years ago, people were very pure. There was no meat eating at all in India. There was no drugs, illicit sex, hardly prostitutes, it's just hardly at all. So, but now all of these things are rampant. And even in Radha Kund, there are many bogus people. They have, you know, a dozen girlfriends. They smoke bidi, etc. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he changed the course of affairs. He changed the emphasis or the mood of advice that the previous acharyas gave in their commentaries, like Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami, etc. He began saying that you should all preach. You know, he stressed preaching as the practice for purification instead of bhajan. And he introduced the rituals of sannyas and the giving of the Brahmin thread and varnashram dharma. He instituted, or we can say, what is the word? Revived varnashram dharma practices and principles, which is very unique. And all, see, before his time, everyone was a Babaji. And they would just wear Babaji vesh, you know, some half-ripped old white cloth up to the knees like this, and some chadar. That's all. That's how the Vaishnavas were dressing at the time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur took this Babaji vesh also. But, after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he stopped all this. Because you can see that many people, they were not qualified to do this. So he just instituted or revived the principles of varnashram and got people to become brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and then sannyasis. They took dandas and they began preaching like this. Although in some places he discusses Raganuga Bhajan, and he mentions something that someone should know about this after 15, 20 years of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, then they should understand these things and they should know what is the goal at least. They shouldn't just become fixed in rules and regulations only. But generally he changed the course of emphasis, and Srila Prabhupada continued to do that even further. So, because nowadays people are so contaminated, they have to wait a long time for this purification so that they come to these higher stages of bhakti. It's not so easy. And I think that those Gaudiya sannyasis from other institutions who are dealing with Westerners now and who are encouraging them on this path, they will see very shortly that these people are not qualified and that there will be many problems within their institutions. They'll have many problems. There will be a lot of sinful activity, and there will be a lot of illicit activity. So, Prabhupada made this emphasis, and we should follow this emphasis. At the same time, we should not be foolish and not know anything about the philosophy of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. We should understand all of these points. We should understand the practice. and the goal. And these things are all mentioned here. The practice is given in detail in the commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He describes these stages of bhakti from Shravana Dasha onward. And we'll write them on the board. And of course, Shravana means hearing. This stage, the person hears Krishna's leelas and he becomes attracted to a particular mood of love. And he takes further instruction and on this from his spiritual master. So he's hearing Krishna Leela, but he's attracted to particular pastimes of Krishna. So he gets guidance on his rasa from his spiritual master, either Diksha or Shiksha Guru, whatever it may be. So that means he's hearing from the Guru, basically, but he's hearing about his mood of love, his rasa, in a particular pastimes of Krishna. Okay? Because this is the state, this is describing Raganuga Bhajan. It's also in the Harinam Chintamani, the last chapter. It's described in detail. You can read that. But please note, it's the last chapter of Harinam Chintamani. One has to go through all of the, you know, chapters before he begins following the last chapter. That means he has to chant the holy name and avoid all of the offenses which are described in the first 14 chapters. And then he gets to the goal, which is this. This is the goal, in a sense. It's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is prema. But this is one of the goals. Right? Because if you can get to this stage, then you're doing pretty good. Then varna, dasha. Varna means to accept. So when the sadhaka hears these instructions and leelas being given by the spiritual master, then he eagerly accepts his particular rasa, his mood of love. And that's called varna dasha. And there's hearing and chanting, so also at this stage he may begin chanting. Maybe Leela Katha, Bhajan or something. He's chanting in accordance to his mood of love. He's accepted it, and now he's also chanting. And then he begins his practice, having accepted it, he begins to remember his service in his particular rasa, smarana dasha. And smarana dasha has five stages. First one is just simply called smarana, when it's a little bit kind of searching with the mind for the object of meditation. In other words, in smarana, sometimes the mind remembers, sometimes the mind forgets. There's a little searching of the mind for the object of meditation, but the mind is not fixed yet. There's some breakage. It's not continuous meditation. Then dharana, that becomes more fixed because the mind becomes completely withdrawn from the external sense objects and it slightly is directed towards the object of meditation. And it delves there, it stays there for some time. It's more steady. So the mind is completely withdrawn from the external objects and it's slightly delving in the object of meditation. More developed is dhyana. That's when there's a fixing on the specific form of the Lord. And it's more thick. There is continuous meditation. And then you have anusmriti. And please note that this word is found in the verse. Anusmriti. It means when there's great bliss, you know, comes into the mind of the meditator from the intense concentration. When the dhyana or the meditation becomes unbroken, then it's called anusmriti. And a great flood of bliss floods into his mind, like a flood of light. And then the last one is called samadhi. When there is nothing left except for the Lord in one's mind. Okay? So this is his practice of sadhana. But when he comes to the point of samadhi, then this next one is called apanadasha. Now, actually, I don't think in our book it's not mentioned, but this is fourth stage. Apana. And this is equal to the stage of bhava bhakti. When a person realizes his swarup, he's at this stage. So we see here is the, here's a system or practice whereby the Madhyam Bhakta becomes a Uttam from Asakti into Bhava Bhakti. This is the point where they meet. So after he does this practice, Apanadasha, it means his own. He owns it. He's assimilated it. And he has Sarup Siddhi at this platform, Bhava Bhakti. His eternal Sarup is manifest to him. He understands what his eternal form in the spiritual world is. Okay? And then the last stage is called Sampatti. Dasha. And Sampatti Dasha, Sampatti means great wealth or treasure or prosperity. This is when he attains Vastu City. This is Sarup City. And this is Vastu City. Yeah, Vastu City is when he has the actual material body and he goes back to Godhead. And Vastu Siddhi, he still has a material body, but he's realizing his eternal Swarup. Still some.
Because the material body's there and the person is realized. But in Vastu Siddhi, he's with Krishna. He gives up the material body. You can. Ihayasya Hare Dasya Karmana Manasagira. Nikilapa Sebastasu Jivan Mukta Sauchite. So when one is engaged fully in the Lord's service, then he can be liberated, although residing in the body. And he can attain prema in the body, but he cannot attain the higher stages of prema up to Mahabhava. In order to do that, he has to attain his spiritual form and go to the planet where Krishna's performing his Prakat Lila in Boma Vrindavan somewhere. And there he meets the eternal associates of the Lord, and they, through, by their mercy and association, they share with that jiva the higher stages of prema, and they train him in all of these things. So those higher stages, yeah, cannot be attained in this body. But one can still experience, you know, such ecstasy which is far beyond anything which is material that we know of.
bhava bhakti and prema bhakti can be experienced. And that itself is so fantastic. We can't even imagine how wonderful it is. So sometimes when devotees, they may know about this other aspect, and then they could possibly conjecture that, oh, we cannot get these higher things now. But first let's get to nishta before we start lamenting, oh, we can't taste aniruddha, modan mahabhav, or something like this. What is the use of discussing such topic in our present state? Any other questions? I mean, generally, they're quoting properly, but unfortunately it's, written in the last century. Or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is from the 17th century, the 18th century, and Jiva Goswami is from the 16th century. So, we're not in those places. And our Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, he changed the emphasis because he saw a change in the behavior of the human beings, especially in the West. Even in India, what to speak of the West. So, these acharyas were, they're giving the absolute truth, but it has to be for a particular patient at a particular time with a certain disease. So therefore, that's why Prabhupada stressed that you have to follow your acharya. And they're not connected with Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Jiva Goswami. Of course, if their guru is quoting these things and telling them, then they let them follow how they want. Those quotes are there. This is my study from looking at the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, these specific verses that are quoted in this commentary, in this text 8, Seva Sadaka Rupena, Siddha Rupena Chatrahi, and Krishna Janam Chasya, all of this, Krishna Smaram Janam Chasya. And these verses are the main verses of Raganuga Sadhan. And the commentaries of the previous acharyas encourage one, as soon as there's any slight inclination, go ahead and get into it. And that was the mood in the previous centuries. But Prabhupada's emphasis is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's observations of the behavior of human beings has altered his emphasis, and Prabhupada has followed his emphasis. And that's why there are many people that they don't accept Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he made some great changes in our line. He emphasized varnashram and preaching. And some of these babas, they hate that. They think he ruined everything. That's what they say. Oh, this bhakti, your param guru Bhaktisiddhanta, he ruined everything. He changed everything. We should go back. We don't accept him. But we accept him. But we don't accept you, my dear Babaji. My dear rascal, So, who do you want me to accept? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or you? So, and Srila Prabhupada very clearly established these principles. When, in the last few months of Prabhupada's manifest pastimes, Bhakti Chiruswami approached him and he asked him about this topic. What about our sarup? Prabhupada, aren't you going to tell us what is our sarup? And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada became a little stern with him. He said, it's not required. Then he said, when you're ready, I will come and I will reveal to you these things. So, imagine that he wanted to clearly delineate what is the actual bhajan. What is the process of bhajan? Because they were doing so many other strange things, so he wanted to, you know, in many of his books he described this process. And when you're reading the books, you kind of get the impression that, you know, you can attain Bhava Bhakti, you know, in a few months. You know, like in all these books, the characters, you know, you're reading the book and then, and you know, in a few chapters, the person goes from sadhana bhakti to raga bhakti, and then he's in Bhava Bhakti after a few chapters. Like in Jiva Dharma, and there's another book I read recently like this. Yeah, Prema Pradipa, the same thing happens. You're reading it, and after an hour, the guy's like flying through the sky with his sarup. But, you know, here we are practicing for 20, 25, 30 years, and, you know, we're trying to get up. It's not so easy, you know. What happened? It's just more difficult, for we're more fallen, you know. We grew up with television, and there's so much illicit sex and drugs and, you know, you name it. It's very hard now for us fallen souls. So we have to be more patient. Another question. Yes. It can also mean this dham. Yeah. A lot of these names are interchangeable. Braj, Gokul. Gokul can also mean the spiritual world. Shweta Dweep can mean there or here also. And, living in Vrindavan, because Prabhupada talks about it in his commentary. When he says, the land of Vrindavan is supposed to be 84 kroshas in area. When one makes Vrindavan his residence, he should take shelter of an advanced devotee there. In this way, one should always think of Krishna and his pastimes. That's why we need the commentary. Was live in Braj. What it can mean, you know, Braj also means doctor in Russian, right? But what does it mean? Goloka Vrindavan. God wanted the devotees to come and visit here regularly so that they can absorb the culture and be purified by living in the Dham. When we perform activities here, they are 1,000 times magnified, preaching or chanting or whatever. And as we said, it's much easier to think of Krishna here. So there's a great advantage for devotees to come here. Devotees should come here and take advantage. They can remain in these places for a long time, then let them stay. If they have some service, if their minds are fixed on Krishna, then why not? Because there's not so many people that can come and live in these places. Because we know that throughout the years, many devotees from the West, they come here, they stay for a few months, 6 months, or even a year, and then they get tired of being so hot and having to struggle, and they go back to the West. It's because it's difficult in some sense to stay here. So if anyone can stay, then let them stay. And as far as those preachers, people who are actually preaching in the West, then they get great benefit from preaching, and then they can also advance. And when they come here for a brief visit, then they get a lot of benefit, maybe more so than those who are living here just kind of hanging around, you know, trying to keep cool, and doing a few hours of service, and so forth like that, because they're making a great sacrifice. But everything depends on the devotee's sincerity and how serious he is and what he wants. It's not automatic that just because you're living here that you're going to advance, or just because you're in the West that you're not going to advance. Depends on the sincerity of the individual. But if those people never come to visit here, then it's not good. They should come and visit, at least. Sincerity of the devotee. Not just simply how much esoterica he has, how much knowledge he has. But he's looking deep within the heart of the person to see, what does this person really want? Does he want to serve me? And if the devotee is sincere like that, then Krishna can bring him up to a very high level just the few moments before he, or the few hours before he leaves this world. He can give him all sambandha gyan. He can reveal to him the Dham. He can reveal to him Nanyashoda, Alita Vishaka, Subal Sridhama, and all the associates of Vraj. And then just in a few hours before he leaves the body, he can be in this deep meditation. And it's quite possible. So it's not that you get a guarantee, you know, just by getting your bhakti shastri, or just by, you know, hearing some esoteric classes, or reading, you know, some books from the Goswamis, that you get a guarantee you're going to go back to Godhead just because you know a little bit about rasa tattva, right? Krishna's not so much impressed with that, but he's impressed with the sincerity of the devotee. But, you know, it's not that we want to keep everyone in ignorance. We should discuss all these things, at least to a certain degree. And all devotees should know our philosophy. They should know all these stages. They should know when they are meant to do Raganuga Bhajan. They should know what it is, you know. And they should know what are the verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And they should know some of the commentaries and, you know, some of the basic points. Like this. So that when, you know, somebody comes up to them and starts telling these things, and they say, oh, they never told us that in ISKCON. And then, yeah, that's right, just come with me, and I'll teach you all of these far-out things now. Oh, okay. Right out the door. Age?
No, danger.
A danger. Of course, there's danger in anything, really. Yeah, because it's a topic which people are attracted to, and because of the conditioned soul's natural tendency to think himself much better than he really is, devotees, they like to jump into these higher topics before they're ready. So if you jump prematurely, then, you know, and it happens so many times. When Prabhupada was physically here, some of his own servants and people, they just left and they went to Radhakund. And they never asked Prabhupada permission, and they never said goodbye, and they just got up and then they left him. And they thought they were going to some higher realm. Imagine that. So, and it happened very often. Prabhupada said, there are already enough monkeys at Radhakund. So, and many devotees have asked questions about Sarup City and so forth to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would just say, just see, he cannot control his eating, and he's talking about Sarup City. What is the use? So the danger is, yes, the danger is to be proud and prematurely jump and think oneself to be greater than one is on a higher platform. And then just, because this book says one should go to Radha Kund and live there. But it's the last instruction. You know, and this instruction is the eighth instruction. There's seven previous instructions. So, but if you can't even follow the first one, Vacho Vegam, then how can you follow this one? So anyway, we have to understand that there's, you know, levels of Dharma and levels of Gaudiya Vaishnav Siddhanta. And there's levels of practice, of bhakti. And we have to go through all of the levels, one by one, one after another. And we should just know what is the systematic science of bhakti yoga. And when we know it fully, then I think there'll be less danger, when there's more knowledge. In the old days, if the devotees actually understood what are the different levels, and they know all the details, and how long it takes, and what are the symptoms and characteristics, then they wouldn't just go jump into Radha Kund like some, you know, like a monkey. So I'm under the impression that the more knowledge we give to the devotees, the more there'll be less these hazards, less confusion, and less misconceptions, and then people will be, you know, sober and systematic, and they'll understand the science, and then they'll follow it, because it's right here. I mean, we're here to follow Rupa Goswami, right? So if you understand what he's saying, you know, really, then you'll follow it. And if I present it to you factually, right, and then you can understand it, and then you will follow it. That's what the whole purpose of this course is, or any course. And of course, you may still, even after understanding it, you may still be so crazy that you may jump and do some weird thing. But, I mean, I think that the chances will be less if you're trained in a systematic way with your intellect and all of your faculties. You know. But in the past, you know, it's just like, we shouldn't talk about these things because it's too high. And, you know, devotees will get bewildered. And we'll just skip over this really quick, and right? That was the kind of, I don't know, the strategy in the past. You know, people would, you know, say, you know, devotees are like mushrooms, to keep them in the dark and feed them a lot of, you know, stool, and then they'll grow nicely. But we see that anyway. It's a different age now. It's already 1998, right? So they know what's going on. They already know, so they might as well just tell them everything. Anyway, I think that this is the brahminical approach, the brahminical strategy. The diplomatic kshatriya strategy or vaishya strategy is to do something and on the side, you know. But the brahminical approach is, you tell the truth and you make it very clear, and then you can do whatever you want. You're an individual, you've got a good brain, we trust you, you're a good devotee, now you do what you like. That's Krishna's style. Now I've told you everything, the whole science of bhakti, now you decide what you want to do. You want to go to Radha Kund and live like a monkey over there? Fine, you do it. It's up to you. But now, at least my duty is, you know, finished. I've told you what it's all about, right? This is the brahminical approach. So we have to learn how to trust the devotees. Just teach them the factual science, and then let them choose how to live. Then there's nothing wrong on our part. And nothing's hidden, everything's very clear. And this is how you should preach to other people also. in the future. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki.